Welcome to Transition, Gadgets 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about all things Spider-Man. And to do that, we have a special guest on the show. That is Rohan Joshi.
Hi, how's it going?
Everything's fine. And you can follow this guy on Instagram and Twitter at Mojo Rojo. Or if you're Spanish, you can call him Mojo Rojo.
Exactly right. I was hoping somebody would have the correct pronunciation of my username. And finally, Pranay, you've nailed it.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. So, is in fact and has always been Mojo Rojo.
Yeah. Right? So after 6 months of intense negotiations with you and your agent, we finally like hired you and like got you on this podcast. Your appearance fee is like already been,
this is,
you know,
fake news. This has been one phone call with Rishi Alwani, who is sitting across from me. Yeah, and so, that's all it's been, because anyway, we went college together. So please do not spread all this fake news about celebrity divaness. Like,
yeah, so let's be like, clear here. There's surprisingly no celebrity divaness. And more importantly, for our regular listeners who are wondering where Mike is, well, Mike's not on this episode. He's been preoccupied with paperwork, for the lack of a better term. So he'll be back next week. But yeah, we're on episode 86. And this one is 86 or 87?
87.
87, my bad. We're on episode 87. And it's all about, as Pranay said before we went into some massive segue, all about Spider-Man. And Spider-Man, because by the time you're listening to this, it's September 4. That's when the embargo lifts on all things Spider-Man, the video game on PS4. And obviously, in a run-up to that, we thought it'd be a good idea to give you an idea where to start on all things Spider-Man.
Yep. So first things first, we will maybe not talk about the game initially.
Yes.
There's a whole bunch of things that came before this Spider-Man game, including some 326 games on mobile, PC, Atari, and all other things that you've never heard of.
326? Is that an accurate figure?
No.
Or you just like pulling that out of your ass? Because I would believe that. I would believe that.
Yeah, same here, because
you
the license
across
has gone.
Platforms, I would believe that. Yeah.
I mean, we've had way too many Spider-Man games and media over the years. There's a lot of baggage with the series.
Yes.
But which is why we've got Rohan on board, because, I mean, he is basically the Spider-Man subject matter expert. Also known as the Jonah Jameson of Spider-Man.
That's it. Just without all the hatred. Just without all the hatred. Just with none of the malice.
Yeah.
So I don't want any Spider-Man smear stories on my front page, guys. It's fine.
Yeah. So before I spend like 30 minutes talking about the only Spider-Man game that I played before this one, which is Web of Shadows.
Yes.
Maybe we want to talk about like what makes Spider-Man such a compelling superhero. Like of all the Marvel heroes that are there out there, I don't think any one of them, Iron Man or whoever it is, doesn't like, they don't really generate that level of excitement as Spider-Man does.
I think it's got to do with a bunch of things. And it's basically, when we talk about comedy also, one of the first things we talk about is relatability. Something has to be relatable. I don't think anything's more relatable when it comes to superheroes than Spider-Man. Iron Man is a billionaire, genius. Captain America is a super soldier.
And Thor is a god.
Thor is a god. Spider-Man is just a kid who went on a field trip and got bitten.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's just a kid who went on a field trip like at his high school and he got bitten. He is a kid. Like in the comic iterations, he's always portrayed as somewhere between sort of 16 and early 20s, Peter Parker. You've seen, whether it's through the movies, through the comics or whatever, it's a kid who's constantly failing at things. He's never home on time for dinner. He's always late on his projects. He's always late for something or the other. He'll finish saving somebody, but he'll come home and find that Aunt May has gone to bed angry with him because he was not home for dinner. And I think there's something about that that just makes Spider-Man extremely accessible and relatable. Every kid reading Spider-Man, watching Spider-Man, think about it. You're 11 years old and you're reading Spider-Man. You get to look at it and be like, in 6 years, I can be Peter Parker. Like, I'll be 17 years old and I'll be Peter Parker. That's not something you can immediately think with Iron Man. That's not... Yeah. I think with Spider-Man, it just comes down to, it's very easy to put yourself in his shoes. And there's something about the character's iconography, like... Even when he's saving people, even in the middle of an action sequence, he's always chattering away to himself. He's always... there's almost this nervous stream of consciousness that he's... It's not just smart-mouthed banter. It's almost like nervous stream of consciousness. I hope I don't screw this up. Constant patter going on with him when he's talking. Even in Infinity War, there's a point at which he's saving Mantis and Drax. And the first thing he can say is, I'm sorry, I don't remember everybody's names. Mm-hmm. Which I think really sums up Peter Parker for me. So I think that's something that really attracts people to the character.
Yeah, so that's why maybe he's referred to as a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man at all times, so that, you know, like, he's...
Exactly.
He could be anybody in your neighborhood. He's a really friendly guy.
I've always said this. You'll never hear anybody say friendly neighborhood Batman.
Yeah.
You'll never, because Batman's not the guy you want to meet in a dark alley or a well-lit alley or anywhere. Because chances are, if you see Batman, the argument is, once you come face to face with the Batman, if you've already done something wrong, you never see Batman if it's just your cat stuck in the tree. But if you meet Spider-Man, he could be there to help you. He could be there to hurt you if you've done something wrong. But I think that's something that really draws people towards him. He's that neighbor that you call at 2 in the morning going, bro, scene ho gaya, main kya karu?
Yeah, so like this thing that you mentioned, the nervous chatter that accompanies him and how, you know, he's a teenager who's just trying to figure things out. Marvel sort of rebooted that recently, yeah. I think in one of the Avengers movies.
Yeah,
but before that, we've had a history where like after Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, yes. there was like a dark phase where, you know, he became not so friendly and you're not so relatable in those 2-3 movies that were an absolute train wreck.
I think what happened was, so first of all, like you said, right, there's so much to unpack with which Spider-Man are we talking about? Because yeah. there's been so many interpretations of the character. I think I can't think of a single character in sort of modern history who's been, like outside of James Bond, I can't think of a single character who's been rebooted so quickly. Like you had 3 Tobey Maguire movies and it was almost immediately that Sony went, because they were worried about the rights lapsing back to Marvel, went, let's just immediately reboot this with Andrew Garfield. And then that didn't work out and Sony was like, and you know, Marvel's like, we want Spider-Man back. And you essentially immediately reboot this with Tom Hollander. Yeah. And you know, it just makes... and I think as a result of that, we got a bunch of very different interpretations of Batman, like of Spider-Man. Mm. I actually really liked how Sam Raimi's series with Tobey Maguire started. I thought Spider-Man 1 was a serviceable origin film. I thought Spider-Man 2, I still think Spider-Man 2 is one of the greatest superhero movies ever made. Oh, yeah. I think it is a damn near perfect film. I think Doc Ock is a great villain. I think the stakes are perfect. I think even Maguire walks this great line between this sort of whiny aspect, which he really leaned into in 3.
Yeah.
And this sort of quietly heroic, you know, lusting and crushing on Mary Jane from a distance. And he really walked that tightrope well. And I think you get a movie that is genuinely phenomenal. I think you get an interpretation of Peter Parker that is genuinely fantastic.
Was that the movie where he does that inverted kissing scene?
No, that was the first one.
Excuse me, MTV Award for Best Kiss. Yeah. I'll have you know, like sewn up in a second.
Yeah.
That's the thing. The second one is the least gimmicky, just the most straightforwardly told, like fun Spider-Man story for me. And I think by 3, what happened was even Sam Raimi admitted that he didn't really care. Because he'd gotten to a point where it had almost gotten contractual and they just wanted bigger, better. And he just sort of gave into studio pressure and made the film he was asked to make as opposed to making one that he cared about. And I think as a result of that, I think 3 is one of the worst third parts of any trilogy ever. Like, I couldn't bring myself to give half a shit. And look, you're dealing with Venom. All right, in 3. If you take on Venom as a character, you better have the same respect where if you're making a Batman movie and you take the Joker on as a character, you need to understand that this is the yang to Spider-Man's yin. So you better not mess that up. And my God, like, I don't know what they did with Venom. Sandman was also just like one half thought out, I don't know what mess. And I think by the end of it, you just had people leaving the theater going, I would be okay not seeing another Spider-Man movie for a while. And I think that really derailed the character. And there were all these... I still remember this random scene of Peter Parker dancing down the street.
Yeah, that's basically become a meme at this stage.
I think it was, in a pre-meme world, it was a meme.
It's quite funny because what Sony had done is they already stitched up Sam Raimi for a 4th movie. And he had basically said by that time that, you know, I'm done. I'm tired of this. And he walked away. And once he did... Oh, well, obviously they couldn't continue anyway. But what's also fascinating, as Rowan said, is like the characters, the villains themselves weren't fleshed out. I mean, Sandman, nothing happens to him. At the end, he disappears into sand, literally. And I'm like,
that's it.
What is going on here? I mean, the thing is, and it's really tragic because the third act of most Spider-Man, of the first 2 Spider-Man movies were really, really good. The stakes were really high. And with the first one, even till the very end, when Norman Osborn, you know, tries to trick you into, you know, getting yourself impaled. Oh yeah, spoilers for a, I think, for 20-year-old movie at this stage. I apologize.
Yeah, I don't think it counts to spoiler if it's more than 15 years old.
But point is, yeah, I think the stakes were really high till the very end, and that pacing carried on in the second movie. And in fact, even towards the end, where, you know, he's trying to save those people on the subway. At the same time, they're actually respecting his privacy by looking away when his mask is half gone. It was pretty cool. The stakes were high enough. And here in the third one, you're like, okay, what? Like, what just happened? So to me, I agree completely with Pranay on this one, where, you know, it reaches a point where the audience perception, now no matter how well it's done, gets a little warped in that respect. And that's the difference, actually, if you consider games versus movies. With games, they just look at how much it's sold and, okay, greenlight a sequel. It's fascinating that Hollywood actually looks at the quality and audience reception before greenlighting a sequel. So
I think it makes a difference to Hollywood for the simple reason is because I just think that sequel and trilogy logic has now taught them that if they hate the first one, you're only going to see diminishing returns from the second one. Whereas I think what happens with a game is sometimes people forgive a bad story as long as the playability is amazing.
Exactly.
And you can sort of, which is why as much as I love the first Tomb Raider reboot, it's getting a little annoying to see the same game over and over and over again with this new series that they're doing. But and it's interesting you should say that, right, about how the switch between 1 and 3, because 1 ends with this sort of beautiful moment of Spider-Man almost very tenderly laying Norman Osborn's body there and Harry realizing what's happened. And that's such a beautiful moment, right, that schism in a friendship. And somehow at the end of 3, you've created a movie so terrible that we don't even care about the fact that Harry Osborn is dying. Having redeemed himself and saved his friends, this entire arc has come full circle, but you're just like, can I leave now? And that's a problem, I think. But I think, I think it's just the relatability that has resulted in this. I think the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies, I feel really bad because I felt like Garfield was actually a great Peter Parker. But I just think he was given super forgettable material to work with. In the same way, I think Peter Capaldi was a fantastic doctor, but he just had some of the worst writing to deal with. So everybody's just like, eh, he's my least favorite Doctor Who. Because he just didn't have the writing to work with. And I think that's what happened. Like, I don't even know what that second movie was. I watched like 20 minutes of it.
Yeah, Electro. And I watched the full thing.
And oh, wow. No, I watched 20 minutes and I was like, no.
Yeah. And the worst part is it ends in a cliffhanger for the next movie. So it ends with him facing off against Rhino. And that's how it ends.
Oh, that's how it ends.
Yeah, literally. It has him facing off against Rhino after his girlfriend. I think Gwen Stacy was in this one. Yeah, so she dies. And it has him facing off against Rhino.
Yeah,
that's how
it is. If I may just hijack that thread, the Gwen Stacy thing.
Yeah.
So his like two most famous girlfriends are these, right? Gwen Stacy and Mary Jane. So I haven't read the comic, but I've read a lot about the comic, which is the night that Gwen Stacy died. So that sort of gives me like the idea that, okay, one day maybe Christopher Nolan will take over Spider-Man and make him the dark hero and like probably make something like that happen.
I hope not. Because Christopher Nolan will just run him into the ground as this sort of I honestly believe that Spider-Man should never be remade in a gritty format for the simple reason that hope is what makes this character so amazing. Like, this is a character that has, it doesn't matter what happens, this is a character that has always tended towards the light. Whether it's just because of the guilt he carries or whatever, this is a character that has always, he's too young to be gritty and jaded. He's a 17-year-old. Like, you can't have, like, a 17-year-old gritty. Like, I understand why Batman is a jaded fascist. Like, I get it. But, no, I don't know. I feel like, and this is with the deepest of respect to Christopher Nolan, I just don't think Spider-Man is in the Nolan wheelhouse at all. Because I think fundamentally Nolan makes movies about obsessives, whether it's Insomnia, whether it's The Prestige, or whether it's The Batman. And Peter's not an obsessive. You can say what you want, but Peter Parker's not like an obsessive, inherently driven by darkness sort of character. And I'm glad you bring up the death of Gwen Stacy, because that really is a sort of seminal Spider-Man moment, right? It's the one that's referenced the most. It's the one that whenever a new Spider-Man project is announced, people are like, are they going to do the Gwen Stacy storyline? Are they actually going to go there? Because I also think when it first happened, it was a huge moment for comics in general, because here is this sweet 16, 17-year-old boy who is faced for not just the first time in life, the second time in his life, with the impossible feeling of having failed somebody he loved and them having died as a result of him. Right? And I think that fundamentally then goes ahead and defines the character for the rest of his run, forever and ever and ever. And I think which is why if any director picks up Gwen Stacy, like as an arc, they have to be really, really careful. And the other catch is, of course, we're living in 2018, where just the idea of a female character that exists to die and give the hero a purpose feels a little weird.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do that arc, you probably have to, in some way, reinterpret that ending or change it around a little bit, because I just don't know how it would fly in 2018, honestly.
Yeah, so since you mentioned that, there's one more thing that I've been wondering for a few days now. Now, we spoke about James Bond earlier. Now, James Bond has gone through so many reboots. And then we also mentioned Thor earlier. So now Thor can be a woman. James Bond can be a person of African-American mm-hmm. origin.
Yep.
So what about Spider-Man? Why does he always have to be this, you know, teenage kid who lives in America? Can he become a she or like have some different Absolutely. Background?
I mean, there is Miles Morales.
There's Miles Morales who's not a white American.
Exactly.
I think when they tried to, I don't know how well it did, but when they did the Indian version of it, they basically did an Indian variant on Peter Parker, right?
Yes,
he was an Indian boy. I've forgotten his name. Something Prabhakar.
Yeah,
it was. I remember.
I think Pranay Prabhakar.
Yeah, Pranav Prabhakar or something like that. Yeah, that they did, right?
Yeah, the point is, it's. I mean, the thing is, the reason why they did that was also buoyed by the fact that that came after the success of the movies. The movies did colossally well here, and even the merchandise did extremely well here, to the point where, I mean, this it goes without saying right now that for Disney in India, their biggest division isn't anything else but their consumer products division.
I mean, guys, come on, let's be real. There's a reason the PlayStation 3 logo was what the PlayStation 3 logo was. Like, let's be real. Go look at the Spider-Man franchise logos of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man and then go look at the PlayStation 3 logo.
So
and Sony literally went, this is going so well that we're going to adapt this logo across our product line.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I mean, there's a good reason for it. And if you also look at it coming to Sony, that's a big market. We're a country of PlayStation fanboys.
Mm.
So it makes perfect sense, right? For them to actually try localizing the character or bring it into light. But I think what happened there is two things. One is, we're not exactly great at paying for content.
Mm.
And two...
Gee, I wonder what makes you say that.
And two, in general, I mean, the awareness around the comics is on a different level. I mean, in the sense that, sure, you have popular culture events like Comic-Con. But fact of the matter is, the widespread appeal came from the movies.
Yeah.
At least for India, to me, it seems that Spider-Man is the movies. And
Spider-Man is... hang on. Not just the movies. Holy crap. I'm going to be the old guy in the room here. Before there were the movies, before there were anything else, when we had one channel, Doordarshan, one of the only cartoons we ever got
was
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Spider-Man.
That too.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yep.
Dun, dun, dun. So, as a result of that, all like you're right though. Mm. Our entire memory of Spider-Man comes from what we've seen in the cartoons, what we've seen in the movies.
Mm.
We don't have a comic book culture in this country. And also, I remember as a kid, even going to comic book stores, we went to a Crossword, you went to wherever, there would be stray issues of books lying around. You were never taught that comics are something that are meant to be read sequentially
exactly.
for you to get the whole story. You would see Spider-Man, you get excited, pick up a book, you'd go home, and then you realize page one is a continuation of a story that started actually 2 issues ago. And the last page of the comic is a cliffhanger that will be continued, or you'll only get full understanding and context in the next issue. So as a kid, you never knew how to do any of this stuff. So yeah, you went with the comics and the movies, which were self-contained stories.
Yeah, and honestly, if you think about it from a comic standpoint, it's basically, I mean, the comics were the original DLC and microtransactions for your narrative. But which is why, I mean, things have gotten a little better now. I mean, you go on Amazon, you go to stores, you actually find compendiums which have the entire collection of that story arc.
Yeah, or omnibuses
book.
At least that will have them all. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
absolutely.
It's gotten a little better, but then, like I said, it's,
also,
it's,
I mean, yeah. just throwing it in there, for people with iPads, the Marvel Unlimited subscription, the Marvel Unlimited app, not amazing, but has at least some basic collections
in
place.
Is it
and you can
available
read books
in India
through
officially?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's expensive. It's $8 a month subscription, but then you have access to the entire Marvel catalog.
Nice.
And you can at any point in time have 10 issues offline.
Hmm. Hmm.
And they also arrange them into collections. So for example, you can read all of Thanos as with every single tie-in and major event arranged properly.
Nice.
You can read an entire Spider-Man story that way. Which is how I was an adult before I actually started going back and reading comics in the order that they were meant to be read. Which is here, this is a major event, this is a tie-in. This is the whole this thing. It took me a really long time to understand that.
Yeah, frankly, I never got into comics like issue by issue. I always picked up the graphic novel versions of all these things. So whether it's Watchmen, Sandman.
Uh-huh. Basically, finite complete runs, right?
Yeah.
End-to-end runs.
Yeah.
So if you're a total newbie, where should you start for all things Spider-Man?
That's a really difficult one because on the one hand, you can be like, because even I haven't gone and read every single Spider-Man book from issue one up until a monumental undertaking. That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of seminal stories for me where I felt like Peter Parker really came alive for me. One is obviously, like you mentioned, the death of Gwen Stacy, because it's just crushing.
Mm-hmm.
Again and again, there's a couple of, I actually really, really, really like Spider-Man's arc in Civil War, the comic series, because he's actually one of the characters whose soul is at play between Steve Rogers and Tony Stark, who are on opposing sides. And he actually signs up with Team Stark first. But at one point when he's faced with Captain America and he asks him, why are you doing this? Captain America says, because sometimes it doesn't matter if the whole world tells you you're wrong. If you're right, you just stand in the way and you say you move. At which is the point at which Spider-Man goes, maybe I'm fighting for the wrong side. And there's also this brilliant, this thing where like completely swayed by Tony Stark, he decides to sign the Registration Act and unmasks himself publicly. And this has horrendous consequences for him. Which is another example of, again, Spider-Man just being broken by the forces in the world around him and still re-emerging stronger. So it's a really, really great sort of evolution and understanding of just what is at play in this poor kid's head when he's being buffeted around by forces so much stronger than him. And another one that's really, really great that I really enjoyed is, I think this was on the more recent run. This was on the J. Michael Straczynski run. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that name correctly.
Yeah, Babylon 5 is not a name that people are going to recognize.
Not a
either.
Name that people are going to recognize. But he also wrote, he also did a lot of modern Spider-Man stories. And that's the cool thing. All the Spider-Man that's written by some of the great writers like Brian Michael Bendis, JMS, is actually some really solid work there. And the JMS story that I really like is this one story called The Conversation, which is the entire comic is just the finally long overdue conversation where Aunt May confronts Peter and goes, are you Spider-Man? And the entire issue is just the conversation that the two of them have, because Peter doesn't know how to respond, because he's like, if I confess, then she knows that Uncle Ben died because of me. At which point she's coming at it from the perspective of, you don't know what guilt I have carried, because on the night that he went out to look for you, I had an argument with him. And the last words I said to him were hateful and angry. And it's just the entire issue is just these two people coming to terms with the guilt and the lie that has sat between them for all the... And like in Spider-Man history, this is a seminal moment where like Aunt May and Peter just sit down and talk about this gigantic secret. And it's a beautiful story. And it's beautiful to read, because again, it's just one of those things that they just tell you everything you need to know about the person. You know, sometimes you don't need to know the person's story. You need to know an incident or two that tells you everything you need to know about the person. And that's just one of those books that really summarizes what Spider-Man is. And I also really like Spider-Man in the comic book version of the Infinity War. Because again, there it really comes through how tiny he is when faced with the cosmic forces of somebody like Thanos. And still refuses to, even when met with that, refuses to back down. In the face of such impossible odds, like at one point literally confronting and standing up to death herself, to the degree where even death is like, I'm just gonna have to let this one go, the fight is too strong. Which I think really again tells you everything you need to know about Peter Parker's this thing to constantly tend towards hope and the light. And I think those stories should sort of give you enough of a starting point. And then Spider-Man 1 and 2, the movies. 3 never happened, the Tobey Maguire ones. You can skip the Andrew Garfield movies. And then I think what? Go straight into Homecoming. Actually, start with the Civil War movie and then go to Homecoming.
So that description of Aunt May actually makes me feel bad about what they've done to her character now in the current series. They made her a joke that Tony Stark hits on. That's it.
Millennial Aunt May.
Yeah. So Millennial hopefully, Aunt May. You know, that changes in the future.
But you know what? That said, that there's also something interesting about that, because in a way, it's also a challenge, right? Which is sort of like, why does Aunt May have to be this doddering woman who lives in constant like guilt and the memory of Uncle Ben? Why can't she be this person who's just gotten up, picked up her life, moved on, raised this kid, and is still living her life? I think it's cool that like Tony Stark walks in and he goes, holy shit, Aunt May is a hottie. She's not some doddering old widow that I thought she would be. Like, Aunt May could, like, I could ask Aunt May out and she would blow me off and go date another dude. Like, so that's kind of cool, I think. Like, as an interpretation also, where they're sort of going, why does Aunt have to mean, like, this thing? Which in a way is interesting, I think, to me.
Yeah, but the scene you mentioned earlier with the Spider-Man and the Aunt May conversation happening, that scene is something that I would really like to see in film or maybe TV show form. You know, because the drama that you mentioned, maybe it can't be reproduced as well as it was in the comics, but it's still something that maybe the movie people are missing out on.
Absolutely. No, it'd be really nice to see that played out. I think that happened a little bit in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies,
yes, it did,
where there were some really nice tender moments between him and her, where there were times where, and it's just something that every kid needs to hear sometimes, right? Where like you just need an older person in your life telling you, you don't need to carry the weight of the entire world on your shoulders. You're a kid. You know, and there was something really nice and tender about that. I think that's another thing that makes Spider-Man so endearing. He's one of the few heroes that has, he has family around him. There's people who can be hurt. like badly, like whether it's Mary Jane, whether it's Harry Osborn, whether it's Aunt May. When you look at even a character like Harry Osborn, there's such a great story there of about how you can hurt your friends without even meaning to. In a way, that sort of twisted creation where Harry also becomes the goblin, it has something to do with what happened between Norman and Peter, right? And I think there's something nice and devastating about that equation also between the two of them.
So, I mean, clearly there's like way too much background.
There is.
And like one thing we haven't mentioned so far is that the Spider-Man, at least on the game side, has an Indian connection.
Oh, yeah. So funny you bring that up.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. So back in 2003, I think in September 13, 2003, India Games had announced that they were working on a feature phone game for Spider-Man. Now, what's interesting here is that it's the first mobile game that was ever made around Spider-Man. And this was back in the day when India was considered to be just an outsourcing hub for games. So
yeah, I mean, we had BioShock being made in India for mobiles. So,
yeah, so yeah. That was 5 years later, actually.
Yeah.
So for this one, what happened was India Games co-founder Vishal Gondal took his VC with him to Marvel's offices after E3 2003, and said, "Hey, we want the Spider-Man franchise. We want license rights. We want to do a game around it." And they're like, "Okay, but do you have the money?" And then he actually shows them his VC and like, "Yeah, he's my bank." So they managed to get the rights. They had a 1 month development cycle, only 1 month to make the game. Yes, and that's because they had the Spider-Man Classic license. Now the Spider-Man Classic license is the license for Spider-Man for the comics and not for the movies. And the thing is, they only had 1 month because they wanted to make. They needed an 8 month runway period to make money on it. And reason being, why only 1 month is because. There is a sunset period for all other Spider-Man licenses before the next Spider-Man movie. So it is the period between Spider-Man 1 and Spider-Man 2, the Tobey Maguire movies, where they had that gap to make the game and make your money and pull the game off the stores. Because, see, licensed games have an expiry date. Every licensed game has an expiry date. It's not just mobile. Even on console, there's a reason why you can't find the Deadpool games. There's a reason why you can't find Marvel Ultimate Alliance from time to time. It's because these license rights lapse. There's a contract in place which ensures that if it's not bought or used in 2 years, it gets pulled
out. And it's a really messy situation because you have like cases where games like Alan Wake are not available for sale because the music license expired. Even with Forza Horizon 2, was it?
Or, yes.
Yeah, so that's still not available because the music license went away.
Yeah, it's a preservation issue. It becomes a preservation issue, which basically means at the end of the day, if you're a collector, if you're someone who cares about it, you'll need to pick it up early. You'll need to pick it up as soon as you can. So with Marvel Ultimate Alliance, they brought it back for a spell around, I think, the launch of Civil War. And I think it's going to go away in a couple of weeks. This tends to happen. It's a thing that happens and there's kind of no way around it. So they had a month to make the game. And until the very last day, and this is something both developers on it, Rishi Oberoi and Srinivas Viragavan had told me, was that till the very last day, they actually had sprites and animations of the game from the GBA version. So what actually happened was they actually had fired up a GBA emulator, put Spider-Man, Menace of Mysterio, they took the sprites from there, ripped it and put it in the game. But thankfully, just before the game was supposed to be sent for porting. So back in the day, they only had 1 month to make the game and they had to spend 3 weeks making sure it was ported to other feature phones. This was before Android and iOS, guys. So you had to make sure your phone worked on your game worked on phones of various sizes, various screens, various buttons. They had to port that all in. So because of the development process being what it was, the animations took a while. And until on the last day, they managed to replace them with their own animations. And it's quite fascinating because back it was a simple 2D side-scrolling game. And it was the team was pressured to get it done in a month. And in that pressure, they forgot to put a boss fight. And when the management at India Games saw that, hey, there's no boss fight, they actually called the developers back. They actually called Rishi Oberoi back saying, hey, man, nice game, but you need to come back and put in this boss fight. Otherwise, we can't send this to Marvel. So he actually had to go back to work. But he lives in Lower Parel. Their office was in Chembur. He had to drive back to Chembur, code in the boss fight, go back, and catch a flight the next day for Game Dev Conference in the US. So that happened. And even on the licensing side, it was fascinating because the Spider-Man movie rights were at Activision. The game rights were at Activision and the movie and obviously the regular rights were at Marvel. So they had to deal with those two parties as well. But it was fascinating because that company put their entire bank account on the game. So I think $250,000 what they had in the bank. They used it to get the license. They paid for the license with that. And then it was a situation where they actually went to a nearby temple and chamber to pray for the success of the game. Because if it did not succeed, they were bankrupt.
Did it succeed?
Yes.
Oh, they
made, in 8 months, they made $1 million.
Nice.
And I mean, every time India Games used to talk about their publishing and what they do in gaming, Spider-Man was always there. And Spider-Man actually triggered them into going on for picking up other Hollywood licenses. So over the years, they picked up more. Bruce Lee, Godzilla, they did a bunch of games on them. But none of them were as successful as Spider-Man. And it was also a catalyst because since they had a working relationship with Marvel, it actually worked to their advantage because when they finally got bought over by Disney, it worked well for them. So it's a fascinating bit of history because you can't find that game anywhere outside of a few YouTube clips.
That is kind of cool. I had no idea that it went through this. Yeah. That's a great story, actually.
And it's funny because the guys who worked on it, fun fact, they were actually brought in to work on a console game. And then 3 months in, they're like, yeah, so we got this license. You guys got to like stop working on this console stuff and make this instead.
Nice.
And it worked out well for all of them involved.
I mean, feature phones are consoles after all. So
Did either of you ever play the old PS2 Spider-Man
game? I played the PS1 Spider-Man game, which was basically ends with Doc Ock becoming some form of a symbiote, and he chases you through this lab that's breaking into bits. It was released, I think, in 2001. It was just called Spider-Man for PlayStation 1. I think
there was a Spider-Man for PlayStation 2 also.
Yes.
That came later.
Yes.
I don't remember it being an amazing game, but I do remember the fun thing being going to super high places and then jumping or webbing.
Yes.
That was fun and quite vertigo-inducing.
Yeah.
Until Assassin's Creed came around and completely like sorted that itch out. I don't remember finishing either of those games, but I do remember swinging around the city a lot. That was fun.
So I played a lot of that in this one too. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I played a game after both these games. It's called Spider-Man Web of Shadows.
Yeah.
So it had, I think, Venom doing some symbiote thing and like, you know, Spider-Man running around chasing him everywhere. But I very distinctly remembered I have a simulator sickness.
Okay.
So
nice.
Essentially first person shooter games I can't play. I start
check out our YouTube channel tonight as Pranay does a Let's Play of Mirror's Edge.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, Web of Shadows was
Mirror's
bad in that way. Like constantly felt like puking while playing that game.
Nice.
But I still finished it. And that was one of the first games that taught me that, okay, maybe this is not for me.
Was it worth it, Pranay?
I don't think so.
Okay. There we go. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, those were the bad days of Spider-Man games when... Well, superhero games in general have been a bit disappointing until maybe I think Arkham came around.
Yeah, I would agree. And that also has to do with the fact that most... you have to understand, before the Arkham games, a lot of superhero games were made as marketing. They were basically made as giant advertisements for the movies that were coming out around it.
This is true.
And we've seen this not
in
just...
In general, any movie tie-in game was just a marketing tool. Like,
yeah, be it Transformers, be it past Spider-Man games, until very recently.
So I really enjoyed playing the Peter Jackson King Kong game.
Oh yeah, so there's a funny story like, around that.
Could just be me. It could be a completely awful game that I just really enjoyed playing.
So with that one, Ubisoft, I think, had an 8-month dev cycle. And they really just had to put something together. So they, and you know, licensed games being licensed games, they were surprised that it actually scored really well. I think it got an average of 80 on Metacritic. But that was actually pretty good. I remember playing that. Some of the cinematic sections and the shooting was pretty cool.
And I remember there's very few levels where you get to play as Kong, but there's a point at which you actually get to split a dinosaur jaw apart. And that I remember thinking was... quite satisfying.
But what's funny in that, and this is something Pranay should be wary about, is it was actually made by some of the guys who worked on your favorite platformer series, Rayman.
Okay, cool then.
Yeah,
all right, so moving on to the next topic.
Do you guys like the Arkham games?
Yes.
I enjoyed the Arkham games. I mean, the first two at least.
So the thing is, like, I liked City a bit, and the thing is, I kind of oscillate between City and Origins, because Origins I really liked because of how compact it was.
Sure.
And it didn't have 2 million distractions lying around. But then in retrospect, I kind of feel that Arkham City holds up better.
Same. I also feel like Arkham City end-to-end is a great story.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. It's a good it's a good, solid Batman story, Arkham City.
Yes. And I mean, that also... And then, I mean, if I compare those two to the first three games, to Arkham Knight... Well, it's like, yeah, I mean, let's just say that Arkham Knight, in retrospect, is kind of like the Spider-Man 3 of the Arkham series.
Yeah, I did not enjoy Arkham
Knight
at all.
I think that's the one I played the most.
Oh, God, no. There was a point during Arkham Knight where I was just like, and when you're playing a game and this question enters your head, it's always a bad sign. Where I was playing and I was stuck on another level and the question that came to my head is, why am I doing this? And I had no answer to this question. And I just put my controller down and walked away.
Come on, combat was decent, man.
No, it had nothing to combat. There were a couple of points towards the end where you're facing off against this gigantic worm slash tractor thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's chasing you around. And it would have worked as a stealth section if you were Batman on foot, because you could, you know, parkour your way around and traverse, use your traversal and get around. But you're on the Batmobile and that thing controls like a tank. So that it's instant death like every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And I mean, that entire moment, that entire section was bad enough. But then that's followed up where you take down 20 other armored trucks in on the Gotham streets. And the save point structure was so bad that if you screwed up the first part of it, which was the stealth section against a giant worm thingy, you kind of screw up that too. You have to start all over again. So that kind of screwed up the entire flow of the game. It was a pain to play in a way. And which is tragic, because from a storytelling standpoint, it did a few interesting things, not as epic as Arkham City, but
exactly
good enough.
Yeah. Great soundtrack, though.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic soundtrack.
Great soundtrack.
Yeah, so that brings us to finally the thing that we lined up here to talk about, which is the latest Spider-Man game for PS4. Is it the God of War of this year?
It's funny you bring up God of War, because I
isn't
have it...
God of War the God of War of this year?
Exactly.
No, so it's funny you bring up God of War, because I have it on very good authority that for Sony internally, globally, they are positioning Spider-Man to do as well as God of War.
Which means
from a sales standpoint, you should be they want to track 3 million in the first week, 5 million in the first month, and eventually, you know, sell it to hell and back.
I wouldn't be surprised if that actually like happens.
Yeah,
if they
because you
targets.
In general have a character that has a wider cultural cachet than even Kratos did,
exactly.
Like going into it, right?
Exactly.
Like every like PlayStation user knows who Kratos is. But everybody on Earth knows who Spider-Man
exactly.
is.
Exactly. Mm. And that's the interesting thing. And we noticed this firsthand, because we were smart / foolish enough to carry a story about Spider-Man Collector Edition pre-orders. Before I know it, my email inbox and my Twitter DMs were basically under siege from a ton of Spider-Man fans in India asking where they can pre-order, because a bunch of sites didn't have it online.
And your phone was also under siege from, you know, all these companies who asked you, okay, where did you get this info from? Even we don't have this.
Nice.
Yeah, that's because, I mean, when you speak to so here's the thing, guys, if you want to pre-order your games, speak to your local retailer. I mean, sure, he might look like a bit of a fraud behind the desk, but he's human too. If you speak to him, you'll get the scoop on these things and be able to
hashtag
pre-order when you can.
Sayonara forever.
Exactly. So point is, long story short, it's got that mass appeal, and it at least from what their expectations are, yeah, it should be tracking.
I really like that gameplay video that they released.
So yeah,
that was fun.
So the gameplay video is okay, but the game itself is on another level. We at the time of this recording, it's been I finished it. Thankfully, it is epic. It is really good in every way. What stands out to me is how traversal works. So in this game, you're not playing Spider-Man as a kid. You're not playing Spider-Man as Spider-Man is in one of those story arcs where there are multiple Spider-Men and he kills himself and the Green Goblin does some... No, it doesn't go into that sci-fi territory either. It's Spider-Man at his peak. And the traversal shows. Swinging from rooftop to rooftop is amazing. I'm yet to see better traversal in a video game. It feels as if you're
Wait, it's better than the glide in Batman?
Yes.
Because the glide in Batman is pretty fun.
It's better than
especially if you can get height and keep going and figure out how to do the dives and the...
Just play the Spider-Man.
It is than the glide in Batman.
Cool.
And
those
it
are
is,
fighting words, man. Those
and
are fighting
it's,
words.
It is even better than the leap of faith in Assassin's Creed.
Damn. Yeah.
And wait, and let's be honest, those two are amateur hour compared to Sunset Overdrive, which is the last game from the studio behind this, Insomniac. Okay. Sunset Overdrive was an Xbox One exclusive, and the entire traversal mechanic in that game was you try not to touch the floor, because in a way the floor is lava. If you touch the floor while you play, you have a ton of enemies that would swamp you, so you'd always want to have an aerial route. So here it improves on that in a multitude of ways. You can essentially go, and I did this, you can actually go from one part of New York City till the very end without touching the ground at all. You can go through low-lying areas like Central Park, which have no big buildings for you to traverse over, by just swinging on the trees. And what's really nice is that there's a good skill system that lets you even take this further. So you can actually, if you even touch the ground for a second, you can tap X to do a full recovery, which lets you bounce and leap higher, and therefore allow you to carry on with momentum. So in terms of a pure gameplay, playability element, it's fantastic. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. The combat is pretty good. Like to me, it's a basically a refined version of the Arkham series in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's what it looked like from the gameplay. It looks like that, but turned to ballet.
Yeah, and what's interesting here is it makes you use your gadgets because of the enemy types it throws at you. There are certain enemies that are aerial only. So you'll have to literally stick your web on them, jump over them, and then do an air juggle where you punch the crap out of them in the air itself, because they do not come to the ground unless they're dead. So there's some cool combat situations there. There's a ton of suits to unlock, and some of them are really, really cool. So you have
any
everything
iron
from
spider?
Yes.
Ooh.
So you have the Mark II suits, Mark III suits. There's even something from Homecoming. There's even one suit which you unlock if you 100% the entire game, which is do all. And there's a
side quest super repetitive.
Oh.
Because most side quests usually are. I have never reached 100% completion because there's a point even in Arkham where I'm like, you know what, the Riddler, his riddles. I don't care. I just don't care.
Yeah, so about that. Now, So the thing is, the traversal is good enough to make you bother with the side quests. There are two kinds of side quests in this game. One is the collecting stuff, where you can collect backpacks, which gives you insight into Spider-Man's history. So you'll find random stuff, like his recipe for dumplings, which burnt down MJ's apartment. Or you'll find this vial which contains sand, which he's afraid to open because, hey, Sandman might just come out again.
Right.
And there are 55 of those to get. You have collection stuff like that. Then you have other side quests, which are basically challenges. So you have the Taskmaster, who's shown up in the city. At least to the amount I've played, he's not exactly a villain you face off just yet. So he'll give you a ton of quests, like defuse bombs, or follow a drone up to a certain point and destroy that, or rescue hostages from mercenaries. So you have challenge points for those. And then you have certain areas of the map, like Hell's Kitchen or Harlem, which will have enemy strongholds. And if you clear out the waves of enemies there, you get other points. Now, all these points have different names. You have base tokens, challenge tokens, backpack tokens. These allow you to unlock suits. These allow you to unlock new skills. So you can actually get this really, really cool skill. Actually, really cool gadget, which allows you, which is basically kind of like a bomb which you throw and creates kind of a singularity black hole where all the enemies are drawn towards it, and then you can use an.
Isn't that from Guardians of the Galaxy?
I'm guessing.
Isn't that from Guardians of the Galaxy? Isn't that exactly what Peter Quill uses?
So it's pretty cool. So you have some cool gadgets. There's even a spider drone, which you can call into combat. And the suits themselves give you additional powers.
Oh,
so
nice.
So one of them is the Stark suit, which allows you to call in a drone with electric shocks. There's another one which, I think the Mark IV or Mark III Spider-Man suit, which lets you become briefly invincible from bullet damage and rockets. So you have some cool stuff going on there. And you end up leaning quite a bit on the fact that you can use L1 and R1 to pull stuff off the ground. So you can pull manholes from our enemies and stuff like that. Combat is superlative. The story really, really, really good. And in terms of whatever qualities you expect from Spider-Man as a character, they're all here in the game.
Also, how does it look?
Really, really good.
How does the game look?
It looks really good at 4K. It looks really good at 1080p. I've played it both on a PS4 Pro. It looks good on a base PS4 as well. Checked it on a friend's base PS4. It looks really, really good across the board. It sticks to its standard 30 FPS, but that's not a problem because the combat is really fluid. The traversal is really fluid. And the story starts off a little slow, but once it gets going, it gets going. And
nice.
What's really cool is the first 10 minutes of the game have you apprehending Kingpin. And once you're done apprehending him, he's basically stuck in a web upside down. And then Spider-Man asks him, shall we kiss?
Nice.
And I'm like, okay, yes, these guys know what they're doing.
Nice.
We are in safe hands.
Nice.
So the game is really, really good. It has a ton of villains. There are some interesting points where Mary Jane...
No spoilers.
Yeah, not a spoiler, don't worry. So Mary Jane is also in the game, and she's a reporter here. And the entire dynamic and chemistry between them comes off really well, because they've just got done breaking up. So they've got this whole awkward chemistry going for it, which works. Aunt May is also in the game. She's looking at this shelter called Feast. And the CEO of Feast is a guy called Martin Lee, who is a very interesting character as well. So point is, it's a really cool setup, and the combat's really good. And what keeps you going is the traversal, which is fantastic. And the story has a fantastic amount of surprises, a lot of Easter eggs too. Some of them not as obvious as the one I mentioned about, the upside down kiss. But by and large, it's a really fun romp. Is it as good as Arkham City? Yeah. I have to say that.
Cool. Those are big words.
So,
as long as you know, those are big words.
I would highly recommend that. Check it out. It's worth checking out.
Yeah, get the collector's edition.
No, come on, man. We've already been through this on past podcasts. But Pranay, it's good you bring that up because at the time of this recording, what Gadgets 360 has been given to understand from sources familiar with the matter, that if you've ordered the collector's edition or the special edition, we highly recommend you give a call to your friendly neighborhood retailer or whoever you ordered it from, because the quantity percentages have been slashed by 35% across the board in the entire country. So if you didn't order early or if you ordered cash on delivery, there's a good chance your order might be cancelled. And another thing, if you're listening to this and hoping Amazon puts the collectors and special editions up for pre-order, that's not going to happen either. We have it on good authority that's not happening too. So just a few things to keep in mind. But yeah, it's really good. Well worth checking out. I would highly recommend. So the thing is, what's good with this one is all you need to know is that Spider-Man is Peter Parker and it's super accessible.
Yeah, so just two things I want to add to this. One is that it's always a good thing about the game's visuals when the cinematic footage in the game looks pretty close to actual gameplay footage. In this, I don't think there is a difference at all. It's the exact same thing.
Zero difference. Yeah, it's seamless.
That's one. And the second thing is that, like, I also played the game for a bit and I noticed that this is one of those Spider-Man where, like, he has machine thingies on his hands and he, like, shoots webs from that. I remember seeing, like, in some book movies, was it the Spider-Man, the Tobey Maguire series where he actually shoots it from,
that,
like,
that was random retconning. It's always been shooters.
I thought that was an interesting difference. I mean, personally, I would have expected him to not have that machinery, but then now I realize that it ties in with the Civil War Spider-Man, where, you know, he's full, like, I don't know, Tony Starkified, if I can say that.
And no, one of the things that attracts Tony Stark to him in Civil War is literally where Tony Stark is like, how did you make this?
Exactly.
Right? As a kid who lives in Queens on his own, his aunt, how did you make this?
Because
he's also a smart guy.
Yeah.
There's actually a few references to that. So his employer basically makes a few references to that, saying that this kid has an eye for guerrilla science. He's able to get things to work with store-bought components. And that's brought up a few times. And even when you collect stuff from his backpacks, you come across an old cell phone. And Spider-Man's like, I wish I get to a point in life where I don't have to rummage old tech to build my stuff. So it's pretty cool. And in a way, whatever you do in the game does a lot to build the character. He does have his moments of nervousness, which is pretty interesting. He has his moments where he makes really, really, really bad jokes that make me look good. So yeah, it's pretty cool that way.
All right. So I think that's about it about the Spider-Man game and history, etc. I think we wrapped it up pretty nicely in about 45 minutes or so.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, we'll be back with another episode.
Oh, wait. Perhaps you're forgetting the most important segment of all. What we're playing this week.
Okay, so Rohan, have you been playing any game this week?
Only been playing FIFA this week, unfortunately. Nothing else, because this has been a heavy reading and work week.
All right.
So, unfortunately, it's just been stuck in the FIFA machine. I was playing Far Cry 5. 5?
Yeah.
No, I'm Montana?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I got a little bored, though. Maybe it's just me, but I feel like there's a point at which all the Far Cry games just sort of blend into each other.
Yeah, that's the thing with most open world games. Unless they have something that really keeps you sticking around, it does become a problem.
Hoping I would enjoy Far Cry 5 because I actually really like the world they set up, with Joseph Steed or whatever.
Yeah.
Creepy dude, really love the whole sort of commune, this thing. And then it just becomes another Far Cry game. So I'm playing FIFA now.
And FIFA 18.
I am looking forward to I am looking forward to Spider-Man next week.
Okay, Rishi.
Oh yeah, so basically Spider-Man, check out the site for the review, the spoiler post, a bunch of interviews with some fascinating people, and a whole bunch of things on gadgets360.com.
And you?
Yeah, so there hasn't been a weekend in between since we recorded this podcast previously. So nothing except from whatever little 2 minutes of Spider-Man that I played when Rishi got the, console to office.
Play Persona 5, coward.
Yeah, well, that's going on though. You know, it's a 90-hour journey and I'm about 13 hours in. Good. So not too bad. All right then, so that's all we have for this episode of Transition, and we will see you with another episode next week. As always, if you like this show, don't forget to follow Gadgets360 on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube and Instagram. And if you have any questions, comments or feedback or fan mail or hate mail, you can send that all in to podcast@gadgets360.com. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Solai Paulson, whose album PPP PPP is where the tracks are from. And if you like this show, don't forget to subscribe to us via Apple Podcasts on your iPhone and Google Podcasts on your Android phone. Thank you so much for listening.